When the world is calling, getting there starts here. With over 55 nonstop destinations, including Montreal, and 20 nonstop flights a day to New York City, travel from Columbus is closer than you think. Start your trip at flycolumbus.com.
Hello and welcome to Formative Media with me, Christian Spicer, the show that celebrates the media that inspires, influences, and defines us. Joining me on today's show is my longtime friend, co-host, colleague, and one of the three fist bumps in the very formative web show, The Totally Rad Show, and, as he says on our podcast DLC, his nemesis. It's Mr. Jeff Cannata.
It is a name that is beloved to me, and it all goes back to reading the Bard's Tale clue book. And Christian Spicer, it's the first time I've ever told anyone that.
And we'll get to that and what exactly that name is in just a bit. But first, I need to say the reason this show will continue will be because of our patrons over at patreon.com/formativemediashow. We are just getting started, and your support is what makes this show possible. By supporting us at patreon.com/formativemediashow, you can get ad-free versions of this show, access to the patron-exclusive community chat, and our bonus show, Zeitgeist, with me, Nicole Zavalich, Khalif Adams, in audio and video forms, and the twice-a-year State of the Show community live chat. All right, with that said, we will get to Jeff Cannata and his piece of Formative Media right after this ad break.
As my piece of Formative Media, I brought along the video game that really started it all for me, and that's The Bard's Tale. It's actually, the complete title is Tales of the Unknown, The Bard's Tale, which I think they initially wanted Tales of the Unknown to be the brand, but that did not happen. Brian Fargo's The Bard's Tale.
I love this. Folks listening probably are aware that we know each other and have for, I don't know, 15, 18, a lot of years at this point. Mm-hmm. And we talk video games every week. We have been for over a decade without missing a week. And for 5 years now, multiple times a week, we talk and put things out into the world, often video game related. So I'm super excited that you're bringing a video game to this show. I'm also I'm very appreciative that you're taking time to join me on this show. The Bard's Tale, 1985.
That's right.
Releases for the Apple II.
I did not play it on the Apple II. I did not own an Apple II.
Okay, okay. They later ported to a bunch of stuff. I even got an NES port down the line.
Terrible. It was terrible on NES.
Before we really dive into The Bard's Tale specifically, I'd love to talk a little bit about its lineage for you personally. You know, you said the thing that started it all. So without getting into specifics of The Bard's Tale per se, how has it kind of stuck with you over these whole bunch of years?
Well, I grew up in the 80s and was born in the 70s, but grew up in the 80s. And video games were, you know, I like to say that my lifetime is the lifetime of video games. You know, video games basically were born right around when I was born.
Okay, it might seem odd listening to this now as video games are everywhere and everyone knows what video games are, and even things that aren't video games have aspects in them that are gamified, and also your parents and grandparents are all playing video games on their phones all day, every day, even if they don't think of themselves as, quote, gamers. But video games in the late 70s and early 80s were still being explained to the, quote, regular folk on the nightly newscast. Yeah, and of course, that also meant they were being vilified as something potentially terrible. What's the hot new thing the kids all love? Must be bad. Like in this CBS Evening News clip from 1982.
Come on in. It's almost another world here in the video arcades of America. A billion games are played every month, a quarter each for escape, which can last a long time if you're skilled. pitch yourself against the computer. Millions, mostly teenagers, have. So many, in fact, that psychologists are beginning to worry that some youths are becoming spaced out on the space games.
See, Jeff was born into a world where the video game rocket ship was just taking off, and man, oh man, did it blast into orbit.
And I was inundated with them in a way that I don't think every single kid my age was. There came a time when the first Nintendo Entertainment System launched, when every kid was kind of into video games. But I was a little bit ahead of the curve because my dad was a nerd and an engineer, and he brought home computers. And I was fascinated with computers. I was obsessed with Pac-Man. We had a school project in, I want to say preschool or maybe first grade. I think it was preschool where we made, it was really cool actually. There was some company that would make a plate out of whatever you drew. So you drew this circle, they had a circle piece of paper and you could draw whatever you wanted on the paper and they turned it into a plate that you could eat dinner off of. And I, since it was a circle, I made the entire thing a Pac-Man. And it was, I drew yellow, I colored yellow the entire thing, and then except for the mouth, and inside the mouth there was a ghost. And that was like my most prized possession as a child, this plate that I made that was Pac-Man. I had Pac-Man bed sheets. You know, I loved video games from the earliest onset. And he brought home a TRS-80 Model 2, which was one of the first home computers. People nowadays refer to it as Trash 80, but it was magic to me. And I was living in Silicon Valley growing up in the Bay Area. My dad worked as an engineer. He would bring home computer magazines and I would read them. I taught myself BASIC, and my sister would sit next to me in my dad's office and read code from the back of magazines as I typed it in. And we would, you know, make games like Hangman and Light Cycles and all those primitive games that existed. I just was obsessed with the notion of digital entertainment, the idea of a computer turning an idea into something tangible that I could play and operate. I loved the nuts and bolts of it. I loved everything about it. So I was playing mostly computer games because I never owned an NES, never. The first actual home console I ever owned was the Super NES and the Genesis. I owned both of them because by that point I was writing video game reviews for a living. I was 14, but I was writing them, you know, for pay, for money as my first job.
Dad, as long as you live in my house, you follow my rules. Bring me my candy cigarettes. Right, I'm writing another review.
Yeah, I was the Hunter S. Thompson of my 14-year-old age. I was a computer gamer. We say PC gamer nowadays. That term didn't even exist, but I was a computer gamer. My column in the newspaper as my first job was computer and video games, right? Those are the distinction. There was video games and there were computer games.
Okay, probably worth pointing out that in addition to there being video games and computer games back then and that distinction, there were also newspapers. And not just like the New York Times or whatever is left of the Washington Post, like a lot of newspapers. Local ones, very hyper-specific local ones, regional ones, city ones, bigger city ones. So if you really want to understand newspapers, go watch Newsies. Okay, that won't really explain newspapers to anyone, but it is a fun musical.
Rise and seize the day.
Maybe someone will bring that to their show as their piece of media. A boy can dream, just like Christian Bale dreamed of better working conditions for newspaper newsy boys. I don't know. Go watch Newsies. Okay. Sorry. Back to the show.
Let us seize the day.
But the reason that The Bard's Tale is special is it's the first true RPG I ever played, role-playing game. And The Bard's Tale really was an attempt to bring tabletop role-playing to computers. And I vividly remember you say box art, but it wasn't even a box. It was a sleeve. Electronic Arts at that time were putting games out in sleeves, almost like, you know, vinyl record albums, not quite as large, but similar sleeve where the diskette, the floppy 5 1/4 inch diskette would be stuffed in a sleeve that you would buy. And so it was this flat thing that was big. And the Bard's Tales cover was this circle that looked like you're peering in the window of a tavern. And literally fantasy characters sitting around a hearth, sitting around a fireplace. And one of them had like a, you know, lute in their hand, a mandolin, and was weaving a tale. And the whole thing wasn't that art. It was like a circular window into that world. And it felt so evocative to me. This place, this time, I was already, you know, reading fantasy novels, and my dad had handed me his old, you know, 1960s copy of The Hobbit. And I remember devouring that and the Ralph Bakshi version of The Hobbit I was already into. So I was like into this kind of milieu, although I at that time much preferred science fiction than fantasy. I don't remember how I got the game, when I bought it, but I remember being so taken by the world that it contained inside its little sleeve. And my best friend at the time, his name was Patrick, and he would come over to my house and we would sit in my dad's office because that's the only place a computer was in our house, was in my dad's little office. And we would sit next to each other and try to figure out this game, which was so beyond our means at that time. We had nothing, we had no form of reference. We had never played tabletop games. We'd never done anything even remotely close to what the Bard's Tale was offering. And there was no internet. There was no searching for game facts. There was no resource that we could find that would give us some insight as to even how to play this game. You know, games at that time came with amazing rule books that were works of art in and of themselves, which I'm going to get to shortly. But I remember just, you know, dying. You had a party of adventurers and you would go into Scarabray, this fictional town, and you could find catacombs. And I remember we must have died in the early part of that game a dozen times, just not knowing at all any strategies for survival, not knowing how to roll up our characters, not knowing anything, but being so captivated by this little 3D window, walking down these narrow streets. You could turn and look at the storefronts. You had no idea what was inside any of the doors. Some you could knock on, someone would answer, some nobody would answer.
I do think it is worth hitting on that notion again of not really having any references for things. Yes, there was the Nintendo tip line, 1-900 number, which was 1-900-288-0707, where you could call for tips and pay, I think it was $1.50 per minute for help, like this gentleman did when the Nintendo tip line was shown on ABC News back in the 80s.
Hi, Nintendo. This is Craig. How can I help you?
Yes. I was wanting to inquire about The Legend of Zelda. I was wondering how you go about getting the White Sword.
Okay. Before I answer that question, can I tell you something?
Yeah.
It's possible that we might be on ABC News, okay? You and I having this conversation?
Right.
Do you object to that?
No problem.
Terrific. Okay, so you're looking for the White Sword in Zelda?
Well, I know where it is, but I can't get my hands on it.
Which quest are you in?
Your world was just much smaller then, in many ways. This is the era of my friend's uncle works for Nintendo and he said that. That's the world. What you knew, what your friends knew, and what your friend's friend's uncle knew. Or you could try to talk to the salesperson at the computer store, but that had high fidelity nerves written all over it. And then you just had to figure things out. Now, I don't know if that was better, but it was a very unique time. Today, you still have obtuse video games that need figuring out, games like Elden Ring, and that's still special, but now people are figuring things out together. The world is just so much bigger. There are entire communities online all figuring out little bits here and there, putting the pieces together. It's still magic, it's just a different kind.
And the thing that stands out to me so much about those days playing with my friend Patrick is you could go to the temple and get healed. And we would need to be healed frequently because we would get our butts kicked by any given monster. And the way the game presented the healing is you'd pay the priest at the temple to heal you. And it would have a little piece of text that would come up that would say,
"The priest lay hands on him,
... ellipses.
And he is healed.
for each of the people that you would pay to have healed in your party. And we would sit there and we would put our hands on my dad's desk and go, and the priest lay hands on him. And then we'd lift our hands in the air and go, and he is healed. Like it was a mystery every time whether or not he was going to be healed. That memory stands out so vividly in my mind. But just this, the magic of there's a whole world in here and behind any door can be untold mysteries. It really was the first time role-playing and deep sort of fantasy storytelling, exploration, world building. It is the first time I had ever truly experienced it. And it came to define a big part of my imaginative life, even to this day. I remember Pitfall and Pitfall 2 in particular being a big one on the Atari 2600 as like, that was the first game where I was like, there's stuff hidden in the game. If you go the wrong direction and you fall down this thing, there's a little area where you could find a gold brick. What? Amazing. That just seemed totally revolutionary. And, you know, so I was playing, like I said, all the Sierra Online games, all the King's Quest and Space Quests. You know, I remember saving up money. I collected cans to save enough money to buy a sound card, an Adlib sound card, to be able to hear the music in a King's Quest game. Like, this is how much I was obsessed with this stuff. And I was not a kid who had friends. I wasn't popular. I was a nerd. I lived inside my own imagination. I didn't have friends to hang out with. I had that one friend, Patrick, but that was only because he didn't go to the same school as me. He was my friend. He was my mom's best friend's son. So he and I were friends from birth because our moms hung out with each other all the time. And he didn't go to my school. So he didn't know my school nerddom. So I could hide that from him and he would still hang out with me. So we had that in common, but like I lived inside my own imagination. So yes, I was obsessed with sci-fi. I was a kid of Star Wars. I was a kid of, you know, the 80s where technology seemed like it only had upside. You know, I wanted to live in the future. The future is going to be way better. The idea of going back to the past where you know, had a poop in a chamber pot? No, thank you. But for some reason, the notion of playing something like Bard's Tale was special in that, you know, even the fairy tale world of King's Quest felt flat and linear. And there was something about Bard's Tale as really the first game where I truly felt like I was exploring a place. And I think that's why it's so special to me. And you know, because we've talked so many times about video games, that to this day, my favorite thing about video games is exploring a place, is going to somewhere that an artist has conceived of and has designed and has populated with moments and objects and ideas that I can discover. You know, it just felt like there were mysteries to be discovered around every corner. And that was unique. That didn't feel like it happened in sci-fi games. That felt like something that only happened in fantasy games.
I wonder if some of that is the Venn diagram overlap of the tabletop world and the video game space. There certainly are tabletop games, role-playing games, games like Dungeons and Dragons. If you're listening to this and not familiar with tabletop gaming, that thing you saw them playing in the basement in Stranger Things, Dungeons and Dragons. There certainly were those types of games that weren't set only in fantasy, but Dungeons and Dragons was so big that I feel like that idea of exploration spilled out into video game versions of it, allowing for that kind of, oh, we see this work in this space. How can we do a video game version of it? And even Dragon Magazine, which was an official Dungeons and Dragons magazine of the era, they reviewed the Bard's Tale and heaped praise on it. The video game market is very different now, but I do wonder how much of the Bard's Tale and these fantasy video games perhaps looked to what was happening in the Dungeons and Dragons space as inspiration.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Did you ever find yourself completing that circle and wanting to go into the tabletop space, or was the video game, was Bard's Tale so captivating for you, you didn't feel the need to explore it in other avenues?
Wanting to, sure. I don't know if you heard me mention, I didn't have friends. The thing about tabletop gaming is that you need other humans willing to do it with you. And that was what was so great about computers. computers is that it took out that whole needing friends part. Yeah, no, I mean, honestly, I don't think you can overstate the impact that Dungeons & Dragons had on the early days of computer gaming, certainly computer role-playing gaming, because it, you know, it was an absolute attempt at creating a tabletop experience where you didn't need to have other people, a single-player tabletop experience. I mean, that's really what the Bard's Tale is, and Wizardry and Might and Magic, and they're all cribbing from D&D. They use dice rolls to determine things. You're playing as a party, even though you're one person. You're cobbling together a party of adventurers, and each has a different class and role to play. I mean, that is not something video games invented. In fact, it was my 30th birthday, my actual 30th birthday, that I played Dungeons & Dragons for the first time. And that was the day I met Dan Trachtenberg and Alex Albrecht. So it was a pretty impactful moment in my life.
And this is where I get to heap some praise on the cool things Jeff, Dan, and Alex got up to. The Totally Rad Show was TV on the internet in a way no one else was really doing at the time. It was ahead of its time in a big way, and I know it was formative for a lot of people who watched it online, went to the TRS panels at Comic-Con, or otherwise followed Dan's, Alex's, and Jeff's careers. It was movie reviews, video game reviews, and the like, but it was so much more, with great sketches thrown in and real camaraderie between the three hosts. It was well thought out, well edited, and well produced. It was proof that TV shows didn't need to be on TV to be great.
Now, I will tell you the name of the character that I played on my 30th birthday when I played Dungeons & Dragons for the first time. The name of my character is Soriak. And the reason that my name of my character was Soriak and the name of the LLC that I own, that I run all my professional life through, is called Soriak Ventures, is because I wrote a short story in fifth grade. We all had to. We were required to write a short story in fifth grade. And I wrote a fantasy story because I'd been reading about them. I'd been playing these kinds of games like Bard's Tale. And I wrote this fantasy story, and the name of the main character was Soriak. And that story went on to win. It was all the stories that we wrote in fifth grade were entered into this young authors competition that happened in my county and my state. And mine got entered in, not because I entered it in, because the teachers entered all of them in. And I not only won the best story for my grade, I won the best story for my entire county. Like, I was named, I was 13 years old, fifth grade, I think it's 13, 12, 12 maybe?
10 or 11.
Really?
Having a fifth grader now, yeah. 13 right. Is like seventh grade.
I had to be older than that, because what happened was the newspaper came to my house and did like a local boy makes good story about me and winning this young authors contest. And at that time, my dad was like, hey, you seem pretty good at this writing stuff. You won this prize. Would you ever want to be a writer? And I was like, that sounds cool. And my dad said, what kind of writer would you want to be? And I said, well, I want to write video game reviews, computer game reviews. I loved this magazine called Computer Gaming World. I still have a bunch of them from that time. It's how I found out about Bard's Tale, is Computer Gaming World. There was a writer in that named Scorpia, who I believe is a woman.
Yes. Zooming out here a bit to give Scorpia her flowers. She was the first household name, for lack of a better term, of video game reviewers out there. Like, full-on celebrity name in the circle, and writing all under a pseudonym, too. She rose to fame writing for Computer Gaming World, and she'd praise games she liked, but she wasn't afraid to dish out some harsh criticism for games she did not. She mostly reviewed games in the role-playing and adventure game genres, and she was a force to be reckoned with. There's a story that goes her review of the game Might and Magic 2: Gates to Another World angered the game's designer, John Van Canaham, so much that John named a monster after Scorpia in his next game. Though Scorpia would later go on to say there was no real bad blood between the two of them, and she actually wished the monster named for her was bigger and nastier. Scorpia was the goat before being the goat was even a thing. And we'll get back to Jeff and Scorpia right after this quick ad break. We'll be right back.
Scorpia reviewed all the role-playing games. I wanted to do that. So when the newspaper came to my house and they were talking about, you know, me and writing, my dad goes, hey, would you ever be up for having my son write computer game reviews for your newspaper? And they went, well, write a sample. We'll see how it goes. Well, that turned into my first job, as I mentioned. My first job was writing computer game reviews. So I always credited that short story as being the first professional thing, the catalyst that kickstarted my entire life as a professional person. It led to my first job. It led to my first foray into reviewing computer games, which I still do to this very day. The main character of that story is named Soriak. I stole that name from the clue book for The Bard's Tale. The clue book for The Bard's Tale is a work of art in and of itself.
Because again, there was no internet. If you were stuck,
that's right.
The game has to give you some clues.
That's right. You would literally go to the store, the game store, and they would have hint books, clue, the Sierra games like King's Quest and Space Quest. They did this awesome thing where they had a highlighter and you would highlight, it would be blank pages and you would highlight to see the clues. Oh, I loved those. Amazing. The Bard's Tale ones were even better because the Bard's Tale clue book is written like a narrative. It's written like a short story or a novella. So the it isn't like, you know, min-max advice. It isn't, you know, go to, you know, coordinate 47 and you'll find the pickaxe of ultimate awesome. It isn't what we imagine GameFAQs even was. It literally was a story that you had to read and parse the clues from because it's just revealing how someone else went through this adventure. So the official Bard's Tale clue book was written by T.L. Thompson in 1986, and it was written as the war diary of Lord Garrick, who went into Scarab Bray, into Mangar's tower, and defeated Mangar. And it's written as his tale, like his diary of what he did in the video game world. It's all in world. There's no talking to the player. There's no reveal. It's just a diary that you read. And the group that Lord Garrick went into, Lord Garrick was a paladin. He goes in with Corfid the Bard, Gakla the Magician, Isli the Paladin, and Soriak the Archmage. And I thought Soriak was the coolest name. And I was writing this short story for fifth grade and was like, I need a name for my main character. I'm going to use Soriak from the Bard's Tale clue book. So to this day, my company is called Soriak Ventures. I still use Soriak as my D&D character name. It is a name that is beloved to me, and it all goes back to reading the Bard's Tale clue book. And Christian Spicer, it's the first time I've ever told anyone that.
Well, I'll edit that out then. Keep it just for me. That's incredible. So clearly, the Bard's Tale is a very formative piece of media for you.
Yes. As you know, I'm writing a fantasy novel now, which I think is kind of the ultimate fruition to where Soriak brought me all those years ago. I did high-profile D&D campaign on the internet. All of those things, I think, can be traced back to that formative moment of being the right age and having my imagination sparked by something like this.
What a wonderful thing to have it sparked by. I think, you know, as I'm watching my children grow through their formative years, I'm constantly filled with awe and wonder, and also maybe because I live in a world fueled by nostalgia, but I also am constantly filled with regret for, did I spark their right thing? My youngest is, as of recording this, in fifth grade. And it's like, have I showed her her Bard's Tale? You know, yeah, like what? Right. And it's, I think, because maybe as I'm having these conversations with people about the media that stuck with them, and it doesn't even need to be media for, you know, my kid, it might not be media, but it's like, oh,
yeah,
they've only been ice skating once.
Right. Yeah.
Quick, go get them ice skating. And I'm curious, we don't need to get super specific or personal, but for you as, you know, an older adult now with children and nieces and nephews, do you see them having these moments, or do you think you can only find it in hindsight?
I think about it all the time, as you expressed. I'm right there with you on wanting to expose my kids to as many things as possible so they can latch onto that thing. I'm also constantly worried that the world doesn't make enough room for those things, that the gap that I filled in my imagination is filled in for kids these days, and they don't have to make the creative leap that I had to make to fill in the gaps, to make the very simplistic graphics live in my brain, to read the clue book's narrative and connect the dots. Everything is just supplied to them on demand, instant gratification, give you exactly what you need. Go here, get the pick of Ultimate Destiny, you know, min-max it, get it done. I worry about all that. But at the same time, I think the process of being young is inherent to that. It is built in. You will either be sparked by something in the media, or it'll be a moment where your dad said, good job on that catch, or your...
I've never said that to my kids.
You're a terrible father.
you dropped another one, Deborah. That's
yeah,
all
or
I...
that, you know, or that is what, no. Whatever it is, like either you find it or you don't. And there's nothing the parent can do to facilitate that other than expose you to as many things as possible and encourage you to go 100% on things, you know? So I don't think it's predictable. I don't think it's manufacturable. You know, you hear about Tiger Woods' dad forcing him to play golf 18 hours a day at age 4. And you go like, well, maybe you manufacture greatness, but I'm sure you don't hear about all the oppressive dads that tried that and it didn't work out. You know right. what I mean? So who knows? Who knows? My biggest fear is that my kids won't find it, or will find it too late, or will, you know, like that is, I just want it to be something. Just find something that fills you with passion and joy and excitement, you know, and that's what fuels my fear for this on-demand world where every possible iteration of a thing has already been pre-imagined for them. Mm. And you can just plug right into it and find it, and it's easy and you don't have to do any work. And so what's the point in even getting passionate about a thing if I can just move on to the next? So that's my biggest fear. And I don't know if that's just old man brain going, the world is different now and they won't have the same things that I had, or if it's a legitimate concern.
There's a wonderful, it is a box quote, but it's not a quote, I guess. It's the flavor text of the game that is on the box, or a version of the box. I think it was on the original version that launched in 85, kind of setting the stage for what A Bard's Tale is. Again, because you and I have worked together for so many years and I know you so well, it would be my honor if you could read this in a, you know, a performative version of this world. Because I think the text is so exciting, but also very much a vestige of its time.
Yeah, for sure.
Game boxes now, one, they don't have boxes because they're just right. digital. And two, if they do have boxes, they're terrible more often than not.
They just have little, they have little descriptors like co-op, roguelite, you know, there's no artfulness to it.
Yes. And this, especially I think with no pressure, I'm putting you on the spot, but this, I think with your performance, is nothing but artfulness. So if you would do me the pleasure, Mr. Kanata.
Certainly.
Long ago, when magic still prevailed, the evil wizard Mangar the Dark threatened a small but harmonious country town called Scarabray. Evil creatures oozed into Scarabray and joined his shadow domain. Mangar froze the surrounding lands with a spell of eternal winter, totally isolating Scarabray from any possible help. Then, one night, the town militiamen all disappeared. The future of Scarabray hung in the balance, and who was left to resist? Only a handful of unproven young warriors, junior magic users, a couple of bards barely old enough to drink, and some out-of-work rogues. You are there. You are the leader of this ragtag group of freedom fighters. Luckily, you have a bard with you to sing your glories. If you survive. For this is the stuff of legends. And so, the story begins.
So good!
So good, right?
Oh, it's so good. I mean, it is.
Well, the other thing that's cool about that is of a unique time that we don't really see anymore is this notion that it was special that it's you.
Yeah.
It's a new thing that you get to do it. You are the one making the decisions. Like they hadn't had a way to do that before, you know? And so this notion of like writing it in the second person and being like, you get to do it felt so, you know, like the privilege of me being the one to do it. It was magic. The other thing that occurs to me is I definitely know that I had never heard the word bard before.
Yes.
I didn't know. I'd never.
It's such a big part of it.
Yeah. And that felt so cool. Like a bard. What a cool name. And bard was one of the classes in the game. Like yeah. Music as magic was such a cool idea to me as a kid. You know, like he plays music to the point where it makes magic. That's so cool.
It is so funny. Also, yes, I definitely did not have any concept of what that was. But it's held next to knight, wizard,
yeah,
paladin, rogue,
yeah,
warrior,
yeah,
dude with the ukulele.
It's awesome.
Awesome. So good.
Yeah.
Not fortune found nor fate.
All right, just a quick one here while we're talking bards and all. The Dungeons & Dragons movie from 2023, Honor Among Thieves, is really fun. Also, Chris Pine makes a great bard.
The tankard and waste the day. Reroll, well you can, our toils can wait for a time. We saw the folly of men rather than
the other thing that is amazing to me about this time that is just hard to even fathom is that I never did this because I just, you know, I'm just a little kid. But some versions of the Bard's Tale allowed you to import characters that you created in Wizardry and Ultima 3.
Huh.
Completely different game franchises.
The Metaverse. You could take,
what?
It was the Metaverse.
Yeah, the Metaverse. Yeah, you had, they were...
all NFT-based.
It was the NFTs of 1985. But what a thing. Could you imagine? I mean, I guess we have something sort of akin to, you know, you could play Iron Man in Fortnite, but could you imagine
that's
like-
That's all licensed. That's not just you do yeah. it. It's not like, yeah, go ahead, scan your Batman comic into Grand Theft Auto.
Or, you know, you created a character in Fallout, come over here and play it in, you know, something else.
Yeah, Cyberpunk. Like, yeah.
Yeah, it's crazy. Cool. Right? That's awesome.
That is awesome. A vestige of maybe how games were made and how computer games were viewed back then.
Yeah, and the stakes were lower, you know?
Yes.
It was a community more than an industry.
Damn, I think that applies to a lot of things, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So one thing I like to end these episodes with, it does not need to be related to the Bard's Tale or high fantasy at all, but it certainly can be. It does not need to be a, you know, hang in there, kitty cat, poster, piece of recommendation, word of wisdom or not. It could just be something that sticks with you. But do you have a quote or something that just kind of lives in your head rent free that you carry with you everywhere you go?
Christian, I have so many. I have so many. This is one of my favorite things. It's hard for me to narrow it down. One of my favorite quotes that you and I have shared many, 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 many times that I think is appropriate here is, a moment enjoyed is not wasted, which is one of those life things that I like to live by. In thinking about quotes, if you'll indulge me, I went back and pulled out one of my old composition books from, I think this is either high school or college. I think it's early college.
Dang.
Yeah, this is like circa, I would say 1996, I want to say. And I would write in, this is, you know, my journal. I would like you to note what is written on the bottom of this journal.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
It says, a Soriac venture,
yeah.
Which is what I would write on all my journals. And I would put quotes on every page. So every page, I wrote things. And then in the margin, I would write a quote on every single page. So I had to find a quote that I liked from every single page. So...
Okay, before we dive into Jeff's clearly not a notebook of a serial killer with quotes scrawled across every single page, hopefully none of them are being red rum, rin over and over and over again, we need to take one more break for some ads. We'll be right back right after this.
So a few of these, and again, these are dated.
These are great. It's going to be our longest episode yet. Keep going.
And this is, you know, when I was in acting school. So a lot of these are acting related. So have goals, not expectations. I enjoy very much. Forgive the curse, but this is self-doubt is only useful if you're playing fucking Hamlet, which I love. Generality is the enemy of all art. I like that one a lot too.
I mean, that's just Gen AI, right? Like that one speaks as McLean.
After his love, the most powerful thing a man can give is his labor. To be able to combine the two is magic. I like that one. But this is the one I wanted to end on. Have you noticed that curious people are always the most interesting? Why is that? I think that's a Woody Allen. Another Woody Allen one that I love is talent is luck. The only important thing in life is courage.
Man, love the quote, hate the person.
Agreed. Well, hey, you know what? What can you do? Wisdom is wisdom, I think.
Yeah, yeah. All right, that's the show. Formative Media was created and is hosted by me, Christian Spicer. So many thanks to Jeff Cannata for joining us. You can find more of Jeff's work by listening to his many other podcasts, including DLC, which we host together, where we discuss video game news and reviews and all that good stuff. Or if you want movie or TV show reviews, check out the Film Cast or his comedy science show, We Have Concerns, with Anthony Carboni. All great, all made with great people. Check them out. Speaking of people, this show is made by real people for you. Our amazing opening theme song is by Tim McEwen. You can hear more of his work by checking out his band, The Midnight. Our podcast album art photograph was taken by Jordan Epstein. And of course, a huge thank you to AJ Filari for all the editing. And of course, thank you for listening. You can support the show and make sure it continues by going to patreon.com/formativemediashow. Until next episode, live the moments you'll be nostalgic for later. Thanks for listening. See you next time.